Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Cure to Read Room. You have your Omiyika 7 live coming to you straight from my living room. I am your advocate, the one you need, and I am your advisor, the one you want. I'd like to welcome you to another day in the Cure to Read Room. Once again, thanks for joining us. To you old friends, I say hello and what's up. And to those new friends, welcome. Have a seat and come right into my living room. Stay tuned for station identification.
All Eyes on You, for Tupac Shakur. As I tossed and turned, unable to achieve sleep, unable to control anxiety, unable to comprehend why, Tupac is not with us. If those who lived by the sword died by the sword, there would be no white men on earth. If those who lived on hatred died on hatred, there would be no KKK. If those who lived by lies died by lies, there would be nobody on Wall Street, in executive suites, in academic offices instructing the young. Don't tell me he got what he deserved. He deserved a chariot and the accolades of a grateful people. He deserved his life. It was as clear as a mountain stream, as defining as a lightning strike, as terrifying as the sun to vampires. Tupac told the truth. There were those who called it dirty, gangster rap, inciting. There were those who never wanted to be angry at the conditions, but angry at the messenger who reported, "Your kitchen has roaches, your toilet is overflowing, your basement has so much water, the rats are in the living room, your house is in disorder," and Tupac told you about it. What a beautiful boy. Graceful carriage, melodic voice, sharp wit, intellectual breath. What a beautiful boy to lose. Not me, never me. I do not believe East Coast, West Coast. I saw them murder Emmett Till. I saw them murder Malcolm X. I saw them murder Martin Luther King. I witnessed them shooting Rap Brown. I saw them beat Leroy Jones. I saw them fill their jails. I see them burning churches. Not me, never me. I do not believe this is some sort of mouth action. This is some sort of political action. And they picked well. They picked the brightest, freshest fruit from the tallest tree. What a beautiful boy. But he will not go away, as Malcolm did not go away, as Emmett Till did not go away. Your shooting him will not take him from us. His spirit will fill our hearts. His courage will strengthen us for the challenge. His truth will strengthen our backbones. You know, Socrates had a mother. She too watched her son drink hemlock. She too asked why. But Socrates stood firm and would not lie to save himself. Tupac has a mother. The lovely Athene has to bury her son. It is not right. It is not right that this young warrior is cut down. It is not right for the old to bury the young. It is not right. This generation mourns Tupac as my generation mourned Till, as we all mourn Malcolm, this wonderful young warrior. Sonia Sanchez said when she learned of his passing, she walked all day, walking the beautiful warrior home to our ancestors. I just cried, as all mothers cry, for the beautiful boy who said he and Mike Tyson would never be allowed to be free at the same time, who told the truth about them and who told the truth about us, who is our beautiful warrior. There are those who wanted to make him the problem, who wanted to believe if they silenced Tupac, all would be quiet on the ghetto front. There are those who testified that the problem wasn't the conditions, but the people talking about them. They took away band, so the boys started scratching. They took away gym, so the boys started breakdancing. The boys started rapping because they gave them the guns and the drugs, but not the schools and libraries. What a beautiful boy to lose. And we mourn Tupac Shakur, and we reach out to his mother, and we hug ourselves in sadness and in shame, and we are compelled to ask, are you happy, Miss Tucker? Tupac is gone. Are you happy?
Thank you so much, Nikki Giovanni, for that bit of information. We still mourn Tupac's death, and we say that the circle can never be completed without Tupac being reconnected. We connect you back, Tupac. You are a part of our lineage. And Nikki says it so well, ladies and gentlemen. We honor Tupac Shakur on his birthday, the day after his birthday. I want you to remember that we cannot die, that in the spirit we live on. So Tupac Shakur will be springing up all over the nation with his poetry and with his vibrant expression of what our problems are. He expresses so well that our house needs to be clean. I, too, say our house needs to be clean. There's a bit of rubbish that needs to be removed, and we have got to change our heart's condition. I see, ladies and gentlemen, that on my itinerary, they want me to repeat certain topics. And nevertheless, whatever comes up on the screen, I can truly deliver. And I will be delivering on the topic that they want me to speak on so well, on the topic of why black women and white women cannot get along. Now, I'm going to speak on that again, even though I have already spoken on it. It's on my billboard, why can't white girls and black girls get along and become friends? Now, we're going to speak on that subject, but we're going to go right into our spirit segment. We're coming on a little bit late, almost a half an hour late, that I have been working with this equipment trying to get on. Now, I thought things were going to get more, we're going to get less complicated now that we have this high technology with the premium package. However, it has been somewhat cumbersome, I would think, with the Skype. Nevertheless, I'm not complaining. We're still on here, and we still are capable of carrying on the show. Now, I'd like to say that as we get in the spirit, I want you to position yourself so that you can stay in the spirit, because what we are finding is that people are functioning in the flesh. Do not be deceived by what you see in the natural. It is not here. It is only an illusion. You must remember that. Yes, deja vu. I've been here before, and meaning that you are not in an unfamiliar place. This is basically a deja vu. All of this is an illusion. You will get out of this. This too will pass. So as we get in the spirit, know that those problems that beset you currently now don't exist. You've already worked them out in the spirit. Now say to yourself, I've worked this problem out in the spirit. My money situation has been already worked out in the spirit. That job that I was trying to acquire has already presented itself to me. That filthy lucre that I needed to pay my rent is already there at the mortgage company. Say to yourself that this is all an illusion. You will get over this, and you must believe that. Every day that you say that, you get closer and closer to the truth. Every man out there who's governing this society wants you to believe that you have more on you than you can stand. But remember, your Creator said that he wouldn't put any more on you than you can stand. Now, while you're standing, I say remain standing. And when you've done all that you can do to stand, continue to stand. Stand with me now, if you don't mind. With your hands facing up, as if you're in the position to receive, we call you to prayer. As we call you to prayer, breathe in the atmosphere of the positive fragrances and breathe out and exhale all of those solutions that you think you can't solve. You must understand that we go into the spirit realm for the reason of allowing your ancestors to come and be a part of your position, to take part in what you're doing, to show you that they, too, are here to guide you and to open every door. Now, breathe with me carefully, in and out, breathing. Now, ladies and gentlemen, as you take your deep breath, synchronize your vital signs as I synchronize my vital signs. We are not here alone. We have summoned our ancestors to be with us. Therefore, we are many in number. As a matter of fact, there are more with us than against us. One can chase 1,000, and two can chase 10,000. Today, we have our army in position, taking deep breath, breathing in the oxygen, exhaling the confusion. Ladies and gentlemen, you are in an illusion. Do not be afraid that you cannot make it. Do not develop anxiety that you won't be able to cross over. You have already crossed over in the spirit realm. Now go with me in the spirit realm as you meditate on the things that you want to change. Meditating carefully on those things that seem like they keep persisting. Meditating and synchronizing your vital signs with mine as you begin to see things change in the spirit realm. Watch them change. See them change. Get over the grain house. Now see your husband lining up with what the word of God says. See your children being obedient. See that job or your boss being compliant and fair. See yourself being able to overcome all obstacles. Begin to witness all of this in the natural while you're under the subconscious mind. We came here for a purpose. You asked to come here. And in asking to come here, you knew the solution to the problem. Now, why don't you fix it? Why don't you fix it? It's within your beings and your reach to correct. Why don't you reach out right now and let the vibrations of your hands begin to vibrate all over this universe. Let the vibrations begin to take up harmony and reconnect to those dead corpses that you think will not travel over the Pacific, over the Red Sea, over the Erie, over the canals, over the seven continents, just to get to you. As a matter of fact, the veil has been torn. You can go boldly before the throne to petition on your own behalf. But because we want to reunite souls, we are calling all of those souls from the lagoon, all of those souls from the underworld, we're calling them to line up with us as we reunite our melanin, knowing that melanin is powerful and it has the ability to give longevity. We're asking that the ancestors will lend us their longevity today in a time when we are feeding off of endless unnutritional substance that can make our minds weary. But our bodies, we have to understand, are perishing. As we speak to the blood, tell the blood to line up with wholeness. Tell the blood to line up with synchronicity. And heal yourself, physician. Speak to the blood now. Those of you who are sick and have palsy and can't get well, tap in and speak to the blood. Tell the blood to line up. And tell the blood that even though it may appear to be putrefied, we speak to the blood to tell it to line up with what the word of God says that it is. God says that your blood was putrefied, but he saw fit to make it whole. Now speak to the blood and tell the blood there's no illness. You cannot be expressing a disharmony when you're in the will of God. You are now in the will of God. Speak things that be not as though they were and receive your healing in the natural and in the spiritual. We decree it. All children that are born here, underweight, who come to this earth in the form of African Americans, and there are many that come here underweight. We have now found why these children are being delivered underweight in the African American race. Father, we speak to that blood of those prenatal children, and we tell the blood to line up, that there will be no more fear in that mother's womb anymore about racism. There will be no more fear in that mother's mind. Her children will begin to come here full term and well developed. because we know that those prenatals are coming here with fear in their mind, and their bodies are not developing, and therefore the research has begun. Thank you, Father, for showing us the solution to the problem. And we've known for a long time, but no one has struck out with a blow. Today we strike out with a blow against underweight and malnourished children who are coming here undeveloped, not at their normal birth weight. We have found a solution to this problem. This problem we can annihilate and begin the process. Father, thank you that mother's wounds have been blessed today. I bless your wounds, mother, that the child that come down will not come down through a canal of racism and discrimination and the fear of you delivering a child in this type of world, mother. You will no longer have this problem. So your children will go to full term and they will not be cursed. That said the Lord. They will be full term and they will be healthy. Those that are listening to the sound of my voice, may you heed to the word of God that this thing is a terrible thing to fear racism and to bring children into this world under the term and the gestation period. We say, Father, thank you for new beginnings for these women. Thank you. Now receive your gift, women. Tap in and receive your gift that you are with child or you're bearing and you cannot bring forth birth because you have lost your children in the womb to racism. I speak against that racism. I speak against that partiality. Your children will be born in full term. No more low birth rates. No more low birth rates for the African Americans. We speak it. Now tap in, sisters and brothers, and decree this thing and speak over it. Because you cannot have a race of people if your children are dying before full term and if they're born underweight. Stick in and tap out and reach out and speak things that be not as though they were. And we give God the glory. To God, the glory is given. All the glory. We say amen.
Oh,
is talking about bankruptcy.
Okay, family. Hopefully you can hear me. Welcome back, family. What I wanted to explain to you this evening is that we're going to go on with our topic. We've had a very, very busy weekend. We did have our conference working with expungement, and the attorney spoke over the weekend. And they spoke in reference to the process of expungement, and we had a number of people to show up. That program went very well. As the offset of that program, we have signed up several attorneys to be a part of our segment who will be speaking with us throughout the week, and they will confirm that. So far we've had over five of them to confirm, and they will be a part of our show. However, Attorney Braden is the one that's on our list, and he will also be heading up the whole group of the attorneys, and they will be speaking on a number of topics. One of the topics that they will review and go over again, we're going to just briefly speak on that topic tonight, is Chapter 7 Chapter 13. Which one do you need to decide upon, and which one is better? Now, I'm not going to speak to you from a perspective of law, but I'm going to give you a general overview of what that topic is like. And when the attorneys come on, we're going to ask them to readdress that. Now, most of you may not understand that a Chapter 7 is different from a Chapter 13. A Chapter 13 is where you reorganize your debt and you set them up on a payment plan so that you are going to be paying those debts back. So in essence, that some of your debt can be, there could be some type of negotiation to reduce that fee to a certain amount or percentage or a certain payment that you're going to make on a regular basis. You can eventually alleviate those debts through paying them off, but there's still some type of pay arrangement. You still have the debt. It is not released, so therefore you are not getting a full release on that debt, and you have a certain time to agree to have them paid off and then have them dismissed upon them being paid off. Now, most people choose that because they don't want a bankruptcy on their credit. They choose that in lieu of the Chapter 7. And when they choose that, that might mean that they want to keep their car and their house out of the debt and they don't want their credit damaged. Because once you have the Chapter 7, it indicates for up to almost 10 years that it remains on your credit, and it could pose a problem for you for future credit. But for most people, it might be beneficial because it will still allow them to make purchases and borrow without having the Chapter 7 show up on their debt. Now, who is it good for? That's for you to decide based on how much debt you have and how much debt you want relief from. Now, then the Chapter 7 comes into play when you have large debts like automobiles, houses, cars that you're overwhelmed with and you want to relieve yourself of. Now, these debts will definitely be the kind of debt that you want to eliminate in most cases. If that's your decision to leave your house out and keep your property, that's possible. Or also to have your car left out and you continue to pay on that. You go in to see your attorney and you talk to them about how overloaded you are with debt and can't keep up with the payments, or you can't meet the payments and you feel that you need to be relieved from this debt. Now, there is a couple of tests that you have to take, and you must meet these tests in order to qualify for this Chapter 7. And in doing the test, you must go through all of your debt and you know, align it in order based on what you owe, who you owe. Then you take the test to see if you qualify to go into a Chapter 7. Now, I am not an attorney, and I don't profess to be. you certainly have to understand that you will have to go to an attorney, and you cannot do this on your own. You might be able to get the paperwork going under pro se, but you will need an attorney because you have to file documentation. Now, a lot of this filing can be done online. You simply must go to an attorney and ask for their assistance and not try to go at it alone. Now, we will have attorneys that will be on the show that will tell you more about Chapter 7 opposed to a Chapter 13, which is best for you. How do you proceed in deciding? How do you take this test and what documentations you need to bring to the session? Try to find an attorney that is offering free consultation so they can sit down and tell you all the qualifications that you must present. Now, I'm not going to say a lot on that any further than that, other than the fact that we will have an attorney speaking on that topic. Most of our attorneys that are going to be working with us have criminal law background, and we talked over the weekend about expungement. Some of the things that we learned about expungement were that the current legislature or the current statutes that are out now, it's up under a statute that talks about if you want to have your criminal records expunged after 15 years of not getting any more criminal charges on your record, that you can petition at that particular point to have your records expunged. Now, will they be expunged? He talked about four things that you could literally have your expungement done under. And I am not a lawyer, as I indicated, but as taking notes, he talked about four areas that we could actually do the expungement under in the event that you were not guilty or there was no probable causes. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to go to commercial right now, and I'll be right back at you in the atmosphere. Hold for a second.
Shoulders are for emergencies only. Talk to me, poem. I'm all alone. Nobody understands what I'm saying. Have you been in jail, poem? A lot of poems go to jail like a lot of women who get tired of no good men. Do no good poems beat up on people? Do no good poems say, I'm sorry, the next day? I know poems get lost because they're always being found. There are wanted posters, milk bottles, and lonesome guitars in the night looking for a poem to take home. I know poems get neglected, just like doo-wop singing on the back porch and the deacons opening church with leaning on the everlasting arms. People forget what got them over, what saved them. What are your plans, poem? Give it up. I hear you're a rap star now, going for the Grammy and the gold. Everybody's singing your praises. Do you ever miss your home? The sign on I-81 says, shoulders are for emergencies only. Ride me, poem. I think I've got the blues.
Ride me, poem. I think I've got the blues. I like that one. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another segment. As you notice, we have been talking briefly about the expungement weekend conference and symposium. There will be several other conferences, and they will be throughout the area of Gary, Indiana. East Chicago and Miraville have been also scheduled for the next event. Now, you definitely want to stay tuned and watch our billboards and listen in on those next expungements. It was rather a successful one because we had plenty of attorneys there present. As a matter of fact, a whole group of attorneys who agreed to be on our show. And those attorneys will be speaking on various different things. As I was saying, there were four areas that they talked about that expungement being looked at, and that was no probable causes, a person was never charged, or a person claimed that they never did it and they don't have proof to show it. But they indicated that there's a new legislature that will be coming out in July 1st. And that new legislature has reduced those dates and years down to 8 years. If you have not had any new charges, you can then request an expungement. And you could also indicate on your record it on your record for application. If anyone asks if you've been convicted of a crime or a felony, that you can answer that question and make sure you have some verbiage to give in lieu of your answer if it's yes. Now, at the same time, I want you to know that attorneys can assist you and help you with this. Please don't think that just because you missed a workshop that those things are not available. They're still available. You can call in, and we can give you referrals of those attorneys that can still help you. If you're out there with a DWI and you feel that there was no probable causes, you can call in, and there are attorneys that are willing to help you to see if you can have your DWI expunged. And you can also ask for limited access to your records where the employment agency would not have access to your records. They would be limited to only those people who were privy to your records. That is also a great thing. That is a great thing to know, because if you could request the DWI to be removed or to be expunged based on those four reasons, and if the judge sees fit to remove them, he can. And you can ask for limited access, which only the legal and the police force and the government can see them, not employment companies and agencies. That will help you in your employment history so you can go on and pursue that job. Now, those are the things talked about in this workshop over the weekend. As I told you, there will be another one in East Chicago coming up in the month of July. And then there will also be one coming up in Miraville on the same topic. So you could revisit this information, and you can also contact the head of that program, Mr. Muhammad. And if you need further information, please call in at 646-478-0270. Our whole aim is to make low-cost attorneys available to you and to also make sure that you have access to services so that you can join organizations that have form preparation under pro bono or pro se. Now, ladies and gentlemen, that's all I'm going to say on that topic, and we're going to try to get right into our topic about always sisters, always friends, always sisters, always friends. Now, somebody saw a need to resubmit our topic on why black girls and white girls cannot get along as friends. Now, I'm going to accommodate them because they still want to know what I got to say on the subject. And for those of you out there who are sitting in the audience who are definitely interested in participating, pick up those phone lines and dial 646-478-0270. And we want you to come in and have a seat in my living room, because this discussion is new and it's fresh. Now, but I will tell you this, because I can see things in the future and knew that it was needed. I've already did the recording that's going to go on YouTube, and you'll probably be seeing that within a couple of months. It is a whole segment where I'm being interviewed about why black girls and white girls are not best friends and can't get along, and why there is this animosity between them. Yes, I'm in Europe, and I'm being interviewed by my son as he takes the whole videotape to another level to talk to me about my position on that. So, yes, in a couple of months, that will be out on YouTube, but I'm bringing it to the forefront right here in the Care to Read room. Now, I brought this topic up because most people don't realize that African-American women are in a war. That's right. I said we're in a war. It appears as if most people think we are excelling and have reached the glass ceiling and that we're doing extremely well in our working careers and our position. So therefore, it takes the attention off of us so no one notices that we're in a war. Do you not understand that African-American women have had to change their whole demeanor in order to fit in to the Caucasian society and to those corporate boardrooms and to rub shoulders with their arch enemy, the Caucasian woman? Now, why do I say that? Because there is a competition going on. She's in competition for the same thing that the black lady is in competition for, that next promotion. That's right. So, yes, there is some cat brows and some dog fights that go on throughout the boardroom and the corporate red carpet. Now, why do I say this? Omi used to work in corporate before I went into education, and I worked for a major corporation where brown suits and blue suits and pumps were required, and there was a dress code. So in spending over 14 years in corporate, I learned the jargon, I understood the procedure, and I understood how I was supposed to get along with my counterpart. And usually somebody was assigned to you. If you were a new black manager, you were assigned to be partnered with some other female that was Caucasian. However, she was showing you the ropes, nevertheless, and you were the student. Not to say that you might have been showing her the ropes and she was a student. Nevertheless, you had to be under the gun at all times. Now, here's my case in point. Because these positions were posted, and when you came into the corporation, in order for you to be hired as a manager, you had to have not only a baccalaureate degree but a master's degree. But the young lady who was put in charge of you, who was Caucasian, did not have to have a master's degree. And more times than not, she never talked about her education to you. But while you were talking amongst a group of people and giving a presentation and a PowerPoint, you mentioned that you had gone to Harvard and got your master's degree or MBA. She then looked at you with a jaundiced eye and said, "My God, I didn't know that she went to Harvard or got an MBA." So now her position of you changes. She figures that you're going to climb up the ladder faster than she will. Now, remember, she is that woman in drag, okay, carrying out the mission because she's watching you to make sure that you don't succeed or, you know, advance her. So what you're looking at is a situation where you're now under flight or fight. During the whole time, you are using different war tactics that are not successful because you figured big girls don't fight, and they certainly don't fight on the job. Your mother always told you. But nevertheless, you're on the job with a viper, and she's going to sting at any account. You don't believe that she's a viper. You don't believe that she will even sting you if you get close to her, so you become a mammy. You start caretaking her and assisting her and being that big sister so that she won't spit out any venom on you. She will see you as that caretaker. Now, after a while, when you get tired of caretaking her and telling her how good she looks and how successful she is and how good she is on a job, eventually she will know that you're playing her. And she'll get the idea you're saying all those things just to get next to me. Now, the fighting is constantly going on. It's going on at the dinner parties that you have after work. It's going on at the Christmas celebration, at the picnic outside with the family. It's going on. Nevertheless, you are trying to hold your ground. You are holding your grounds like a lady. Now you find out you're at war with this young woman. For what reason? You don't know. The first thing you say is, can't we all get along and have peace? No, because you got that MBA. And you got the better deal because you're a double minority. And I know you can go places and I can't. What happens then? Do you put up dukes and stand up to her to fight her? No, you become more clever than her. Just like she's a male in drag, you become a male in drag too. You start thinking like a male and doing the things that a male would do. Let her keep carrying on. Let her keep carrying on with her foolishness. But the real man in the group would sit back and let her have her day, her heyday, and not do anything, and watch her dig herself in a hole. Now, most of you black women don't know how to handle yourself in a corporate job when you first get there. You find yourself getting big paychecks, and woo, you're getting big bonuses, and your benefits, they're off the chart. Now, you're saying, girlfriend, nobody's going to get me up out of this job. I've waited for almost 4 years to get this degree. Now I'm rolling in the dough, and I'm up with the big wigs, and I'm not about to give up this job. So this is another sister girl that says she would rather fight than switch. So she calls out the sister on the down low outside of the job employment. So what happens when she does that? She calls her out and asks her to go out to a disco out in the urban settings where most of her girlfriends are. So she figures, if I take her out here in the community where my girlfriends are, I will have my posse with me. So she takes her out to the urban. She takes her out to the urban setting where the clubs are. But she doesn't understand that the Caucasian young girl is looking for a new experience. She's all ready for it, and she's all queued up. So when she gets there, she is more down in the hood than the so-called sister is. Now, the thing that the sister thought she was going to do to this young girl to make her feel uncomfortable, she finds out that nothing she does can make her feel uncomfortable. Now, the war is on now. Now, it's really on. So she flips the script, and she's out in the hood with her white girlfriend, who her white girlfriend is having that cultural experience. She is just so glad to attain that cultural experience. Now, what do you do about that? When you call yourself being in the war and the young lady flips the script on you? Well, I tell you, you're going to have to stay tuned for our next segment to find out. But what I'd like to tell you is this. African-American women and African-American girls as well, and Caucasian girls are faking the funk. As far as them going into a situation, working together, getting along, it has never been there. And it's time somebody talks about it to bring it out in the forefront. So what is the problem, you say, Omi? The problem is competition. They're both fighting for the same African black stallion man. They both want a tall, dark, and handsome black man. And I said that to mean what I'm saying, because all their life their mother told them, the Caucasian girl, get you a tall, dark, and handsome stallion. Now, what is closest to a tall, dark, and handsome stallion than a black man? So the black young lady is in competition with the Caucasian woman or the black male. Is this a natural setting? No, it's not. Now, how do you get the Caucasian girl told on this topic and explain to her, look, Susie, that tall, dark, and handsome man that you have been biding for was created just for me, the black woman? Oh, but Susie is going to beg your pardon. What do you mean? I have everything he ever desired and need and want. Now, you go out and get you a weave just like Susie's hair, that long, stringy, beautiful hair that flows in the wind. You go out and get you some contact lens just like Susie, but those are hazel eyes, so now you got you some hazel eyes and some blonde hair like Susie, because you figure she got the better deal. Now, you flip the switch. You get rid of your kinky, curly hair, and you go and get that horse hair and that Remy hair, and you wear that. So now you think you are more appealing to that black man. And then you also go get you some extension, some of those Korean long nails, and then those eyelashes too, because you know she got the natural eyelashes. The Caucasian girl's eyelashes already grow. So you go and get all these things. Now you go back to your tall, dark, and handsome man. He looks at you like you a fool. Girl, who the? He is all upset at you. Take off that extension. I like you better with your fro. And what about your kinky, curly hair? See, you got a problem now. Now you got this man looking at you cross-eyed because you done added all this fake stuff onto your body. But nevertheless, you still are competing with Jane over here. And your boyfriend is still looking at you like you're strange and you lost your ever-loving mind. Let me tell you something, girlfriend. Just to be in competition with the Caucasian girl, you don't have to give yourself over to her by trying to look like her. The best you can do is to keep it real, girlfriend. Did you hear what I said? Keep it real. When you keep it real, I think your brother man can understand where you're coming from. If you go and resort to trying to beat her at her own game, you'll never win because you can't grow out the hair that she has, and you certainly can't get the shade of color eyes. So you'll forevermore be in competition. And this will keep the fight going. That's why I tell you the fight still goes on. Because we still got some little Kims and other folks out there that are still trying to mimic the white girl and not be themselves. Now, what are you saying, Omi? It's okay to be dark-skinned, ladies. Let me let you in on a tip. I'm dark-skinned, and black men, light and dark, love me to death. This caramel black skin is in vogue, okay? And yours is in vogue. Don't go putting bleaching cream on your skin, tanning your skin, subjecting yourself to skin cancer. And don't go getting those weaves that's so long you can hardly manage them. It's okay to wear a weave every once in a while. Only believe in putting on different hair pieces and on things like that. But you got to wear your afro every once in a while, and you got to put your fist up in the air and say, Harambe, Harambe. Harambe. You got to put your fist up in the air and wear that afro every now and then. There's nothing wrong with that. I surprise my children around here, too. They say, Mom, what's wrong? When you going to get your hair did? And this is not black power. I tell them I am black power. So I have a right to go back to that era and time. Now, let me say this to you, ladies and gentlemen. All jokes aside, you got to be real. You got to keep it real. If you're going out and you want to look different, that's fine. Take the stuff off sometimes. Omi takes her hair and sits it on top of a wig piece every now and then and come out of the room with my fro. Now, I'm telling you this because a man must know that what's up underneath is real. Now, you're in competition with Jane. He knows that. He knows that you're competing with Jane for him. So every once in a while, he plays a game with you. He helps you go get them nails done and them eyelashes. And he also helps you to pay for that Remy hair so you can look gorgeous every now and then. But he'll say, baby, go on there and take that stuff off and come on back in here. Now, I want you to know the real deal. The real deal is when you oftentimes take that stuff off and let him know you can be a real person, he appreciates you more. But nevertheless, the fight still goes on with a Caucasian woman because she's aiming to show you that you don't have what she's got. But let me tell you something. You got more than what she got. You just don't know it. You got a couple of inches deeper than what she'll ever know. She can't even compete with you on that level because that is an anatomy that is documented and you can prove it to her through Dr. Lyola Africa. Meaning that if you got a few inches deeper, and if your man is toting something deeper, then you were divinely created for him. And whoever didn't want something that didn't fit, just tell her, girl, if it don't fit, stop forcing it. And when she hears that, she will eventually get to know what you're talking about. Because if she can't handle that part of the aspect, I don't care how much hair she grows out of her head, she got to grow for a few more inches between her legs. You have to tell her that. I'm talking about anatomy. You're in a war. And black women, you have to understand when you're in a war, they bring our carnal weaponry to come against you. You don't have enough of the knowledge to understand which enemy you're fighting. Go and get yourself some knowledge so you know what to throw out. So your weaponry will not be carnal. Now, Omi has spoken on that. And if this topic comes up again on my screen, I will speak on it again. But it needs to be talked about. We're talking about the glass ceiling, and I'm going to go to the phone lines now and get what Mrs. Harvey has to say on the glass ceiling. Mrs. Harvey, are you out there?
Yes. What I want to say to you is this, that the black woman and the white woman can come together, and the black woman can be jealous of the white woman's hair, and the white woman can be jealous of the black woman's body, due to the fact that the hips is The black woman don't have to go and get false imprints and false muscles and all that put in. So there's two kinds of things. We have to get our hair done, and they have to get their imprints in. So that makes us jealous of each other in a lot of ways. But when it comes down to our black men, we can fulfill our goals with our black men anyway. Not only with our black men, but the white man too. So therefore, the black woman has no reason to be jealous of the white woman of anything.
Thank you so much, Mrs. Harvey, for the information. Now, let me say this. I want to get it clear that it's not jealousy that I'm worried about. It is a competition in the workforce. And because most of our working hours are spent in the workforce, more than likely some of the relationships are founded on the workforce or in the workforce, and they're pursued right there on the campus ground. And nevertheless, these relationships are founded right on the campus ground where work is being conducted. Now, will it stop? I don't know. But what my point is that Sister Girl and Miss Jane are going to continue to have these bouts, because when the gentleman comes into work and he is looking for that particular woman who can make gestures, look good, and keep her mouth closed and not be disgruntled, then he begins to look for someone that is a lot more mature. But if all you are is a bundle of nerves and you're immature and you are just physical, in the physical, and you have no spirituality going for you, he's more than likely going to go for that person with the spirituality who can read him. And most black women can read black men. If they still did what their mothers told them, they can walk in a room and be seen and not heard and continue to do whatever that man needs and have it done while he nods his head and has very few words. One of the things that we have been taught as African Americans, that is why you have a lot of the jargon now called street talk and hip-hop talk, because African Americans have been taught to use fewer and fewer words. Be as frank as you can with as few words as possible, and we can get through this conversation. Black men are devastated when a woman comes in talking too much with too many words. He's overwhelmed by that. Now, we as black women get all articulated up and keyed up with our words and persuasion that we talk ourselves out of a good thing. However, the Caucasian is learning very well. Come in and be quiet and observe. So as we begin to understand our black men better, we say the black man is looking for an experience, not a marathon with words. More than likely, even if he's intelligent, he is mainly observing and watching. And if you're doing all this talking, he's looking at you, he's frustrated. So black women, as a keynote to us, try to do less talking around a black man and more assessing and observing, because your white counterpart, the white girl, is checking him out, and she's learning exactly what he wants, and she's delivering it. And if we don't get smart, we will miss out on all the opportunities to deliver what we already know that the black man needs and what's necessary for him. Now, why am I saying this? Dr. Lyola Africa has written many books, and one in particular that talks about the anatomy of the African Americans. And he talks about the anatomy of the vagina as well as the penis and what has been designed in geometric shape and diameters was divinely designed to fit a certain dimension. So in knowing that, and knowing that the shaft of the white woman is much shorter than the shaft of the black woman, it would only behoove you to understand why the small penises opposed to the large penises and why the broad hips opposed to the narrow hips. All these things can be accommodated in Dr. Lyola's material. Go out and seek his book and read it and get an understanding of what you're reading and try to comprehend. So on that note, we're going to ask Ms. Harvey if she has any other words to say on why the black girl or why the black woman and the white woman are having problems and can't seem to get along. Let me go to our phone lines. Mrs. Harvey.
Well, I think that we don't understand each other, and we really don't we don't understand each other to a certain extent that the black woman is not educated into certain things as the white woman is educated to. And that's one reason why we haven't voted ourselves up to standard. And there's a lot of things that the white woman is not educated to about as the black woman is. So we need to come together and sit down and have some conversations and see what we can bring together with our with both of
Miss, Mrs. Harvey, let me say something on that note. I do not agree with you, and I make no bones about that. I don't come on this line saying that the black woman is not educated and do not know, because there's no excuse for that. The black woman is more educated than she's ever had been before. So we're not going to play the sapphire role on this line, and we're not going to tell the world that the black woman doesn't know but the white woman knows. We're showing partiality and racism, and I appreciate if we would not show that amongst ourselves. Because there's too many black women in the boardrooms that are VPs and heading up corporations. Now, we got to check our statistics. What we're talking about is a misnomer, and we certainly don't want to give that to the audience that because we're black, we're ignorant and don't know anything, and don't know anything. And we cannot use partiality because we've been trained wrong, and we got to get it right. Just because a white woman may be in the workforce, that doesn't mean she has most of the knowledge. 9 times out of 10, she probably has fewer degrees and less credentials than a black woman. So what you're dealing with is a brand new world where most black women are more credentialed than some white women. But most white women do not need the kind of education that black women need in order to be in the boardrooms. You should know that, Ms. Harvey. She could get in that boardroom by virtue of who she knows, not because she has the credential. So let us not put stigmas out there. We want to put documented information out there, and statistics will back me up on this. There are far more black women in those corporate jobs who are more than qualified with not only bachelor's degrees, but MBAs and corporate CPAs and also master's degrees. So they're all mastered up. So what am I saying? They're mastered up, but sometimes they have nowhere to go because the white Caucasian woman who's standing in drag, who is fighting to keep her down, to prevent her from going on, she has been put there to govern her. And she refuses to let her go on, and sometimes she can stagnate that black woman from going forth in her corporate pursuit to a better lifestyle. Now, as you know, we've been talking about the good life. That will prevent her from getting on to the good life. And the sister girl sees it from afar. She notices it. Then she becomes frustrated. Sometimes she do one or two things, act out and go after her man. And when she goes after her man, she goes after him with a vengeance. And guess what? She ends up in bed with a Caucasian master of the ship, the director, the manager. She ends up in bed in a direct effort to dismantle the Caucasian girl who she's at war with. She doesn't have to love that man. She wants to show her that she can get him. It doesn't even have to be the Caucasian man. It could be a black manager. She wants to show him that she can get him. Now, why? Because she has the beauty to go after him? No. She's trying to show them that I have the width and I also have the affluential influence to make the change that I need to make. So this war continues to go on. Will it ever stop, you say, Omi? No, it won't stop. It's a war by nature. And most people who are listening now are sharpening their claws right now, preparing for a fight tomorrow. Don't tell me you're not. I've been in corporate long enough to know that you are going home, Caucasian, and you're talking about the black girl on the job. And black girl, you are going home, and you're talking about the stiff-necked white woman that won't let you through to get to your promotion. So you're constantly fighting. And you're going to fight the next week, and you're going to fight at the picnic, and you're going to fight in the boardroom, and you're going to continue to fight until you sit down and have a talk about what it is that you're in competition for. Let me make it plain for you. Everyone knows that because you cannot become best friends, because you're after the wrong thing in the workforce. If you were there to go to work, to advance yourself, then you possibly could become friends. But because you're there to get the good life, You want to get the gold, and you want to get the man, too. So the competition continues on, and we're going to continue on this show tomorrow with more information on why the black girl and the white lady and black lady can't get along, and what's the problem? How can we solve it, and can it be solved? Ladies and gentlemen, stay tuned. This has been Omi Inca 7 and my co-host, Ms. Harvey. I'm going to give her some input here and give her some opportunities to say something. Mrs. Harvey, we're cleaning up our show here. You can clean up your act. You got a few more minutes. What do you have to say?
I just want to say that I agree with you that when the black woman and the white woman can come and sit down and come to some kind of agreement about certain things and talk things over, then they'll have a better relationship on the workforce.
All right, then. On that note, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to get our things together, and we're going to get up out of here. And we're going to get ready for marriage and family life. Welcome to kindergarten. It will be coming back right at you in a second, ladies and gentlemen. And if you will just get ready for the sermon.
The sermon on the warp land. The fact that we are black is our ultimate reality. Ron Karenga. And several strengths from drowsiness campaigned, but spoke in single sermon on the warpland, and went about the warpland saying, no, my people, black and black, revile the river, say that the river turns, and turn the river, say that our something in double pod contains seeds for the coming hell and health together, prepare to meet, sisters, brothers, the brash and terrible weather, the pains, the bruising, the collapse of bestials, idols. But then, oh then, the stuffing of the hulls, the seasoning of the perilously sweet, the health, the heralding of the clear obscure. Build now your church, my brothers, sisters. Build never with brick, nor corten, nor with granite. Build with live love, with love like lion eyes, with love like morning rise, with love like black, our black, luminously indiscreet, complete, continuous.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, get ready. We're going into marriage and family, and we're going to be talking about welcome to kindergarten. Y'all ready?
Y'all ready?
Come on, kindergarten.
Say yeah! Say yeah! Say yeah!
Welcome back, family. This is the Care to Read Room. We are family and consumer science education. Therefore, we cover the segments of family life education. This month's segment is being focused on financial literacy and junior achievement. We have chosen junior achievement to partner with by virtue of the fact that they have created micro centers throughout the United States and that they're re-educating our schools to make our children function as if they're in a macro world. What do I mean by that? I mean they are understanding that literacy, financial literacy, comes before you enter college, and it should be something that we should be beating the doors down about so that our children can economically learn to be solvent, so that when our nation represents itself, we will have a solvent nation that can function in the halls of the judicial system as well as in the arena of the financial development. And as it stands now, we will be bankrupt by the year of 2019, which is a year that will mark 400 years from being out of slavery. If we don't turn things around in our family life education, that's right, as a home ec major in the School of Home Ec, one of the things that we were taught that I am so grateful for is to understand that there must be a structure in your financial development and understanding money and how money is used, because you are a steward. Excuse me. And being a steward, you don't own anything. You have just been made guardian over funds that you must manage. So during this segment, we're going to be talking about something that's near and dear to a good friend of mine, Dr. Jawanza Kanjufu. And we are planning on having Dr. Jawanza Kanjufu. We're going to invite him. We have not confirmed that, but we're going to be inviting him later on this month to talk with us about why are so many mothers raising their daughters and teaching them about management, money management, financial literacy, making purchases, and investment when they're raising their daughters to understand the management and then they're just loving their sons. It's natural that you want to love your sons, mother, because you want them to learn to be loving. But you must also train them with the skills of home economics. You must also tell them to roll in those parenting classes and learn the fundamentals of being a father and understanding how households are ran. If we don't do this to our young men, they're going to be terribly, terribly listed on the list as the bald eagle, and they will be endangered species. So if we want to take them off the bald eagle list, we must prove that they're capable of functioning in a capacity where they can manage money and decipher what investments to make. Mother, stop loving your sons and start raising them. And stop just raising your daughter who's getting all of this training because she's so submissive and it's so easy to train her and she's so willing to learn. Then make it a part of your requirement that both your children get equal time from you. Now, statistics are showing that we wait for Susie to speak. But for our sons, we don't have the patience. We assume they don't know the answer. And this has been proven over and over again in statistics that we use less time for waiting for their response, the male, than we do for the female, because we figure he just doesn't know the answer. And quite often he doesn't know the answer. It's because we refuse to challenge him to the test of doing his homework and computing and knowing the answer. We've just got to require more of our males. And I know that because I have to eat in my own message. We require more of our males and push them to the limit and require them to be able to do the same things that our female children can do. Mothers, why are you loving your sons and raising your daughters? Your daughters are going off to college, and they're maxing out these colleges, and they're the number one candidate that's enrolling in school, the female. And the males are lagging behind because we don't push them enough, and we don't think they have the aptitude, and we tell them they don't have to go to college, just go to work and earn some money. But they do have to go to college, mothers. If we're going to have a world and society of individuals that are intelligent and able to have an intellect and converse on the topic of being an intellect and not just a ghetto intellect, then we're going to have to give them the ability to acquire these opportunities, not necessarily just in a college. It could be in any institute of learning that they can acquire knowledge. But you're going to have to sit down with your males. You're going to have to show them around the house, how to keep house, how to manage the house, how to take a survey of things that need to be purchased for the house, how to make wise investments for moving, for renting. You're going to have to teach them how to balance their checkbook and pay bills. You're going to have to also teach them that there is no such thing as female chauvinistic belief where the female only does the dishes and the female only cooks. Teach that man how to interchange his skills just like a woman. No, he doesn't have to be gay to learn how to cook a meal or to learn how to keep a kitchen. Those are survival skills. And you must teach your young men, women, because they won't have the survival skills to take care of themselves. So stop loving your sons and start teaching them. How do you do that, you say, Omi? Well, you put them in every training program you can, and you put them into extracurricular activities so they are not just sitting around being fed everything and not being told that they have to work to get something. Stop letting them off the hook. Mother, stop buying them those $120 gym shoes just because you want him to look nice. And stop giving him all the things that you said that you never had. Then if you never had them, he probably don't need what you didn't have anyway. Start showing him that he's not the man of the house and he's still your son and you're still in charge. And let him understand that because you don't have a man in the household, you still have a nuclear family. A single head of household and her children is still considered as a family. Don't let him overthrow you, mother, and tell you what to do, and you become fearful of him. So therefore, you don't raise him. You let him be raised by the streets. And you said it's going to make him a man. I say no. I say you continue to run that household, mother. If your son is in the house, he will dance to your music. If not, he can take the lesser route and hit the door. Moms, you got to put your foot down. Sometimes you got to put your foot in your young man's chest, and you got to let him know that you'll knock a blow in them just like you would any man that crosses you. Once he knows that, make him give you respect in that house. Don't let him run over you. And don't let him use that male chauvinistic attitude around you about all women are V-I-T-C-H's and they're no good and they're this and they're that. Don't let him run that down. You make him understand that a woman comes here wanting to be loved. A woman comes here wanting to serve. And if a woman has been turned out, it's usually a man who's turned her out. Make him understand that women come here with a desire to serve. Don't let them develop a male chauvinistic. Mom, see there, that's why Dad left. And that's why you don't have a man now. And that's why you're all alone by yourself now. Because you keep on bothering me. You keep on telling the man what to do. Keep telling him what to do. As long as he's in your house, he's not a man until he leaves. You respect him, but while he's in your house growing up, and underage, you treat him like he is a student. And when he can get his own house, then he can make the rules in his own house. Don't let him overthrow you or intimidate you because you don't have a man at home. So now you're feeling bad, so you're going to make little Junior the man of the house, and Junior makes all the decisions, and he's running y'all into the hell hole because he don't know what to do with money, and he don't know how to practice paying bills on time. You got to help them, mother. Quit playing these games with children. Children are children because they need a guidant person, someone to guide them. Now you, mother, are going to have to start showing your daughters that you got to spend more time with the males. Yes, because girls will generally pick up on things. You don't have to show them over and over again. Sometimes these stubborn-headed young men have to not only be told, they have to be showed. So you got to do show and tell with them, mother. Sometimes you got to get up out of your bed and go around the corner. If Johnny's at that pool hall or if Johnny's at that discotheque, you got to show up. And you got to light the place up and say, Johnny, I want you out of that place right now. And when you show up enough times when they know your name in the place, he going to get tired of his mama showing up there. Then he's going to recognize he has a curfew. Yes, you must impede a curfew upon anybody to stand in your home because you don't know what heat they will bring to your house. And because they're going to respect your house, and as for me and my house, we shall do what? We shall do what? We shall serve the Lord. And you can't be serving the Lord when you're letting any old trash come in throughout the night. And there must be a respect of the time limit so that they're not coming in and out of your house after a certain time. Now, I'm telling you to raise your son, mother. And it doesn't hurt to show love, and with kindness you can draw him. But every once in a while, let them know that you will throw a blow to their chest. Put a little bit of fear as well as respect, but learn to be their friend so you can communicate and he can come to you like one of the boys and talk. Don't have him so afraid that he's afraid to tell you things. Now, some of them get in their mind, I don't want to tell you this because I thought you'd blow up. I don't want to tell you this. I done created my own new play mama so I could tell my new play mama because she is just laughing off with me and she ain't going to say nothing to me. Don't let them go out there adopting new families because these new families let them get away with stuff that you don't normally let them get away with and they're wrecking havoc in your home. Don't let him come back telling you he got a new family. You straighten him out. This is the only family you have, and you answer to this family as long as you're living under my roof. And don't tell me you went over to Miss Susie's house and her husband, who drinks all the time, you've adopted them as your new family so you can sit up over there with them and drink when you get ready and won't nothing be said. Cut it out, family. Stop it right there because you got to raise these boys and stop loving them. Now, when it comes to the sister, you've got to show them that every man they meet, they cannot be going to bed with them, falling in love with them. You have to show them decency and prepare them to be courted as well as to be married. Teach them to be young ladies while teaching them financial security and how to manage their money and quit throwing it away on clothes and excess things they don't need. We've got to learn how to raise our children. Now, in school, teachers, when the boys come to school and you're favoring them because you want to give them their way because they're on the basketball team so they don't have to do any work in your classroom, all they have to do is show up, and you're signing off that they're good to go for their grade and they're going to play on the basketball team, but yet they can't pass your midterm exam. Stop it, teachers. You make that young man learn how to write a brief or a book report or a review, and you teach him well. Don't have teach him so it affects him down the road. Passing him on will never do. You will definitely have to remediate and show this student the correct way. I know you love his dimples, and boy, when he smiles, the room lights up. And when he comes in the room, everyone's happy, and they're dancing to a beat that you don't even hear the tune. I want you to turn off that jukebox and make that young man sit down and be accounted for and make him produce his assignments. Stop letting him get away without doing anything. Now, you're loving your boys, and you're training your girls. The girls have already been taken care of. They naturally watch mom. And they're listening to what mom has to say. Mom, you don't have to do so much work with them other than show them about the birds and the bees and teach them that every Tom, Dick, and Joe that they meet is not their new husband. And teach them to take time to study the man and keep their legs closed. They don't have to be engaging in sexual intercourse to keep a man. Now, we're talking about parent education here. Why? Because we're family and consumer education. Well, we teach on parent education. We don't want you blowing up on that job and getting promotions and advancing yourself, and you don't have your family life together. So when you get that filthy lucre, you won't know what to do with it. You won't know how to manage your house. We need to get everything in balance, and that is to get the family together. And that's why we're speaking on the topic today, ladies and gentlemen. I want you to be mindful and cognizant of the fact we can no longer just love our sons and raise our daughters. We are going to have to love our daughters as well as raise them, and we're going to have to raise our young men and do it with loving kindness and teach them consequences and choices and options. Always give them choices and options so when they make their decision, they make it on their own. This is how we teach them to become adults. Some children want to tend to be disconnected from you and don't want to be associated with you. So therefore, they do everything they can to get out of your grips. But let them know that there's no grip being put on them and that you want them to grow up and that you want them to adjust themselves. And let them know at the same time that you'll be in the shadow somewhere waiting in the event that they need you. But let them make some mistakes on their own and let them understand that as far as you're concerned, you have always wanted them to be cut off to start their life. Don't make them think that you're in the shadow making everything happen for them because they'll resent you for it. They won't love you, mother. They'll resent you thinking that you have never taken your grip off them. And most young men snicker and go back to their friends and say, boy, I wish my mom would just go away. And then until something happened, then they start calling and crying for her, but they don't understand. It is our desire that we should disconnect from our children so they can become independent. And in helping our young people to become independent, we must train our young men and love them while doing so. And we must also love our young daughters and show them that we care enough for them to pull them aside, to tell them to take off that tight skirt, take out that revealing blouse, and put on some clothes and stop showing all of their continence. We love them that much that we don't want them to be exposed. And mothers, it's not a problem with you telling your young girl she can't wear certain clothes out or she can't expose herself. You put your foot down and let them know you are the authoritarian in the house, and you make the decision. They're going to growl at you. They're going to fight. They're going to even want to try to take over the steering wheel, but don't let them do it because they are not driving, parents. You are driving that vehicle. And as long as you have the steering wheel, you have the vehicle, and you can steer it in the right direction, and they cannot raise up against you. If they raise up against you, you put them down. I mean put them down to the floor and put your foot in their chest to let them know that nothing in your house will rise up against you as long as you are the captain of the ship. You must take the rein, parent, and you must take the rein tightly and gear the ship and bring it home safely. Do not let children run over you. Do not let children take authority over you. Speak and say a prayer and let God do the rest. Don't put your hands on a child by physically abusing them, but don't let them rise up over you. Put them down on the floor and speak to their consciousness and tell them and speak to their spirit and let their spirits know that you will not tolerate it in your house. Nothing that you birth will raise up against you. And I decree if you do this every time, every time they seek to raise up against you, they will think twice about the fact that you are going to bring them to the floor. Now, I want you to be conscious, parents, and I want you to also be wary at the same time of other people trying to raise your child. Do not let your child go out and be raised by somebody else. There are many people that want to take over your good work and let your good work be spoken of as evil. Do not let them intervene on behalf of your child to change the direction or the chart that you have charted for your child. Speak to your child and tell them you God has a plan for their life, that man plans, but God is the best of planners, and allow God to give their ship and the plan and to lean out on their own understanding, and he will direct their path. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for being a part of our show. This is a family segment, and I do appreciate so much the opportunity to share with you about family life. It is my major undergraduate in home economics, family life education. However, my educational degree cannot compare in the master's level to what I learned in child development. It has been so beneficial in my life. I hope that it will be beneficial in your life, too. Stay tuned now as we go to our final show as we talk to the doctor, Dr. Jamel Harvey, on the awareness of health. And as we go into the awareness of health, ladies and gentlemen, I want you to understand that This is a gift to be able to have the doctor in the house. He's a resident doctor, and he brings us all kinds of information periodically. And I'm going to go to Mrs. Neely's teacher. Welcome back, family. We're now approaching one of the best parts of our show, and that is our health awareness. And we'd like to welcome you, one and all, to our segment on health awareness, where we bring in our resident doctor, Jamel Harvey. Dr. Jamel Harvey has been with us throughout this segment of our show. He is one of the tribe. And because he's our resident doctor, we refer to him for a number of EI topics. And this particular topic we're going to be talking on is health awareness, is why coconut oil is so special and how does it create skin deep beauty and why are so many illnesses treated with this particular oil. And there has been a number of women talking about this oil on YouTube, talking about how you can use this as a cosmetic product for the hair internally as well. We're going to be talking to Dr. Jamel Harvey about that particular food product, and I will also say that we cannot recommend any particular product. However, we will just give you the gist of the actual content of coconut oil, but not any brand. And I hope that you will be joining us for that segment. And Dr. Jamel, I think he's out there in the atmosphere. Let me check to see.
Good evening. I'm great. And can you hear me?
Can you hear me?
Yes, I
can. Okay, very good. How are you, Dr. Jamel?
Very good. Very good.
Very good. We're glad to have you here on our show. This is a segment that people have been waiting for, and I'm going to ask them to light those phone lines up for question and answers at 646-478-0270. You can now call in. We are on the topic of health awareness with Dr. Jamel Harvey. We're going to be speaking on that lovely topic, is beauty skin deep, and how can coconut oil prevent you from aging and give you skin deep beauty, and why are so many women raving about using it internally and externally for their beauty? So, Dr. Jamel, can you give us any enlightenment on coconut oil? Is this a fad, Dr. Jamel, or is this real?
Well, it's real, and you have to realize that you're in the United States. Okay, so being in the United States, how much access do you have to coconut trees?
Very limited.
You don't. Very limited. Very, very. So it's not what you would call an indigenous plant to Midwest, to the East Coast, to the Northwest Coast, or even to the Southwest Coast. It's indigenous maybe in Florida and the tropical areas, meaning that it is a tropical herb. It's a tropical plant, okay? Thereby, it gives off tropical enzymes that are good for penetrating and has good emollients. That's why it's good for hair. That's why it's good for an enzyme balancing a protein. However, you have to be very careful with overuse of coconut oil because of the cholesterol content. There's good cholesterol and bad cholesterol in the body. So coconut oil has a lot of emollients. You just have to be careful with coconut. Okay?
Dr. Jamel, because it has all those emollients, is there any chance of it becoming rancid if exposed to light or sunlight or air?
Yeah, I mean, anything basically can spoil, including coconut oil. So you just have to be very, very knowledgeable about your body first, your tolerance. A person needs to know where their blood count is at basically all times, the type of internal cleansing health you have on your body. You have to know you before you encounter upon any herbal products or just about anything. You have to know what's going on with you first. And the
now,
reason
Dr.
being...
Bill, I had a question. I had became interested in it because on YouTube I was looking up some of the remedies for natural hair products, and this coconut oil came up so frequently that a number of women were purchasing online, and they were using this coconut oil to grease their scalps and to also deep penetrate their hair follicles, and they were finding that it was giving their hair the ability of being silkier and less tangly, so that they could use it for an enriched, deep penetrating conditioner so that the hair was very manageable. Now, they also took it internally, and they were giving all kinds of reports about how it was making the skin actually plump up, and some of the emollients in the skin was becoming more smoother and less cellulite. So they were finding that internally it was being ingested to help the outer exterior of the soft tissues become smoother, and the hair was becoming shinier and a lot less brittle. So if it's just used for a natural form, I would think that, you know, any product now is saying, I want to put coconut oil in my product because it's going to make beauty skin deep. So should we be leery about the types of brands, or does it really matter?
Oh, yeah, you have to be leery about the type of brands. You need to get into as organic and raw as possible. Any type of product that's pure from pesticides, from synthesized or synthetic additives put into products, if you can stay clear of that, you are good in just about any situation. The coconut, again, emollients and high enzyme activity, ability to emit antioxidants. It's high in antioxidants, high in protein balance and emollient balance as well. It absorbs very, very readily into the cells and into the skin. That's why you get such a really, really good results with the coconut oil. But again, watch the cholesterol levels with the coconut products in terms of ingesting the coconut products.
And Dr. Jamel, I was also reading somewhere in one of the health books that not just the coconut oil, but the meat of the coconut, where the milk lies, that there were a number of companies who were dry freezing the milk into a powder form, and they were using this milk to treat college students. And they found that with all of this, the actual emollients in this powder substance, it had a very high content of minerals. and the minerals were causing the students to be able to retain information in short-term memory and long-term memory. And this powder solution was being used like powdered gold throughout the campus, and these children were finding that the minerals was helping to them to retain information.
Well, yeah, it takes oxidation off the neurosynapses in the body. Neurosynapses are responsible for signals going back and forth in the brain.
Okay.
So you have something, yeah, that's basically what you have there.
So would you say that the college students on campus where the cooks are preparing that that this substance could be beneficial in the mineral deficiency? Because I hear a lot of people talk about, okay, we're going to get all these proteins, but I found that when children ingest natural minerals, they have a tendency to have a different spark about them, and their ability to radiate is a lot better because they're sharper, and these minerals tend to be absorbed immediately.
Well, the mineral that you may find would be selenium and silica. Selenium acts as an antioxidant and works synergistically with vitamin E, okay? Silica, which you would find also in your coconut, is important for skin strength and elasticity, and it stimulates the collagen formation in the body. So that's in abundance in coconut. That's why you get such a fast result with the coconut. The coconut harbors the minerals of selenium and silica, as well as other antioxidant minerals that will help to stimulate the collagen matrix in the body and to work synergistically with other components that's in the coconut or that you will also take. So you've got a product that a plant that is manufactured in sunlight, and it's in the soil, volcanic in Hawaii, let's say, or in the South Seas where the coconut is abundant, right? There's a lot of volcanic soil there, and in that volcanic soil, you have a lot of minerals that come from deep within the earth for millions of years. So you are dealing with trace minerals. You're dealing with synergistically balanced minerals and ions sustained in that coconut because the root of the coconut tree absorbs and it brings that mineral into the product, right? So you've got two situations going: photosynthesis from the sun, organic base dirt that the tree actually is in because of its geographical location, the South Sea, tropical environment, below the equator. All those things help to bring about such a well-balanced product.
Now, I'm going to change gears a little bit here since we are talking about all of these substances for life and try to impose on you a bit, Dr. Jamel. On the topic that you and I both had viewed a video at one of our counterparts' house in reference to low birth weight in a child. And during that particular segment, the doctors were asking, well, the question was posed about for low birth rate, what did it have to do with the child, with the parent and their diet and their position in life. And I was very, very shocked to find out that well-to-do middle-class women that were black were subject to this type of stress that's been imposed on them to cause a low birth rate. And we both found out that it was the ability for these women to have a problem with racism and partiality. And they were threatened by racism no matter high they went up into the profession of the field. The more higher they went up in profession, the more that they were threatened by racism. And if they were at the childbearing age, they produced low birth rate babies. And they found it so consistent in black women, and primarily those who were experiencing or threatened the most by racism. and it didn't stop based on economic status. I was very alarmed by this to find that there were so many low birth rate babies amongst black women opposed to white women, and I couldn't even decipher why would it be the rich middle class black women. They were still threatened by racism, just like the lower socioeconomic women. Can you elaborate on that at all for me, on the diet of these women or the environment of racism?
It's really simple. For black people, black women who have moved into the middle class basically have forgotten who and what they are. Now, what does that mean? That means that from a cellular level, because your cells are live, living entities in your body, they make up you, your cells. We get fed through truth of who we are on the planet. Whenever you walk away from your culture and who you are, your cells that are the original cells from the original DNA from you, okay, you got to go all the way back, right? The problem with black people right now is that we're being genocide, nutricide, herbicide, we're being eliminated. We're being eliminated through various ways. One of the ways is to weaken our immune system and to destroy us from a cellular level, okay? Now, those women, all right, have lost contact with their culture and their self-esteem identity as black people. They have to remain and get back to black consciousness. Why? Because in that whole institution of black consciousness, you have a melanin-driven spirituality.
Okay, Dr. Jamel, that is certainly true, but what could you speak to the direction of the low birth rate and them producing these low birth rate children because of the
cellular
partiality and racism?
Cellular destruction brought on by fear. Because if I'm fearing something, now I'm in a nervous frenzy. If I'm in a nervous frenzy, I am beginning to...
So what is this fear? Fear of
what?
Racism?
Of course, I'm going to lose my job.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to be thrown out of my middle-class home. I'm going to lose my position. And as such, you lose your children. Because as you are pregnant, as you're going through the paces of trying to live and work and get pregnant, and you're going through the paces of dealing with, you know, white supremacy as a black person, you're going through the paces of trying to be accepted because you're educated. Why can't I be accepted? Or why do I have to fight these unseen but known battles on the job?
Could we also say that the enzymes that run through your body cannot be altered and cannot be changed, that when you're experiencing these abrasive behaviors towards you because of your race, your body automatically sends out enzymes that directly affect that fetus without you even knowing. And periodically you're going through flight or fright throughout the day, so you're constantly adrenal glands.
You have to eat according to your culture. Black people are trying to take on European culture. And then taking on European culture, they take on a European diet. That's not your indigenous DNA diet.
Okay, let's go back to the aspect of the fact that some of them are eating more healthier than they ever have, be it white, European diet or black diet. They're eating more healthier than they ever have because they're in a higher income bracket. Now, that has nothing to do with the fear that they're experiencing from racism. Where is it coming from? Is it coming from up head?
Self-esteem.
You have to perform
self-esteem.
If you don't?
Self-esteem issues.
So,
in other words, self-esteem issues.
Okay, but let's add something to that based on what? They don't know who they are?
Well, based on the fact that what in this society supports black is good, and it's okay to be black. What in society supports that, and do you feel that you as a black person has the support of the general population?
Okay, now let's get back to something, Dr. Jamel. Let's get back to these babies. Now, here you and I both viewed this videotape, and we viewed it from doctors' perspective, where they themselves were puzzled by all these low birth rates. I once participated in working with trying to help eliminate birth rate, and we had to start working with helping babies from the bench. Now,
okay,
if
let's be more technical.
Let me finish my point now. What I'm trying to get at is that we know that the diet and we know that they have self-esteem problems, but here we're talking about racism. What is racism? Racism is the ability to prejudge before the fact. Now, if this is what they're experiencing, this anxiety from being indifferent, feeling impartiality, it's got to be enzymes being released to cause this low birth rate. If we had to look at the genes, what would we be looking at?
The biggest enzyme is hopelessness. I have no power. There's no way in God's kingdom that's going to get power at this point. When you see, and I hate to say this, I really, really hate to say this, but it must be said. A white supremacy world does not give a black conscious thinking person any vestige or hope of having power to
What if they saw their ways, the Caucasian, and wanted to help to make a change and to recreate the will and say, I see my error. I now would like to change that before it's too late. What would be some of the recommendations that you would have that they could do to make some immediate changes?
First, they have to get into black culture and black self-esteem. That is essential. That is very essential. It's essential for your children because the black youth is under the same attack as the women. It's manifesting in a different way. So, in fact, integration was really not good for black people.
Would you also say that this war that we're in is a war and attack on the unborn fetus that does not even yet exist? So this war is being fought in the deep, dark pit of the womb without us even knowing it, and the woman is experiencing it, and she knows it firsthand because when her child is born low birth rate, and she finds out that during the whole trimesters of her 9 months, she was living her life in fear from racism.
Well, it boils down to cells are intellectual. Cells have consciousness. Now, if you take upon a European consciousness and your cells are from Africa, there's a conflict. If you do not allow any of your African heritage to be embedded in your soul, now you're in conflict with yourself. In that self-conflict, a fetus decides that I will not come in this world with a Eurocentric consciousness. I know a lot of people are listening and saying, "Now that's a little too radical. How does the baby know?" Yes, we're talking about.
You know
about
what, Dr. Jamil, that's why I asked you that. I sincerely know this because when I worked in the hospital, I worked in prenatal, and the children that were born with low birth rate were not thriving. So my job was to go in to get the breathing treatment and to hold this baby throughout the day. And I felt the coldness in these children. And just with the warmth of the human body, it began to make the child gain weight and to thrive. And something in the fetus was basically causing this child to have fear. It had to be because some of these children were big enough to fit in the hand. Now, you know that is minute and small. So these women that were middle class, executives, doctors, were having fear of racism. Can you imagine how much fear that the lower socioeconomic woman was having?
Absolutely.
Her day-to-day problem was greater.
Absolutely. You didn't have this problem in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. Only until around the 80s did we start seeing a lot of different types of problems creep up in our community. The black community has always been drug infested because those that want to destroy the black community have dumped drugs in the black community and taken away opportunity. But we have to stand up, as a lot of black leaders have said, and we can create and do for ourselves. But if you have a church that does not think about doing for itself, and teaching its people to do for itself, that manifests into your physical. And the result of what I'm saying is now there's so much black high blood pressure, black diabetes, all of these problems that's associated with just basically death. And all of these people are coming from culturally centered Christian churches. And it's like, this is horrible. It's horrible.
Well,
because
Dr. Jamal, we're going to leave more time for these other topics because of time constraints. We're going to try to stick to the fact that we want to leave a vapor in the atmosphere. Ladies and gentlemen, it has now been discovered by many doctors that the low birth rate is not only being brought on by women who are eating faulty diets and depleted diets, it's being brought on, primarily confirmed by Caucasian doctors, by the stress, hopelessness, disparity, impartiality, and racism that these professional leaders in our community, doctors as well as lawyers, are experiencing. So I want to put it out there. We're going to be doing more research on this because I work with a project called Helping the Babies from the Bench. Now we're going to have to looking at prenatal a different way. If this prenatal seed is being attacked in the womb, can racism be more deeper than we ever will know? And could it be imposing on us even in our genes? And if so, how do we combat this war against women? As I told you, there is a war against women, and I brought this topic up to show to you that the war goes beyond just on the surface. It is affecting the womb. We're going to bring more of this to you next time on our next segment. I'd like to thank Dr. Jamal Harvey for being one of our in-house residents. Because of time, it's against us, but we are never out of time. We will be back with you again tomorrow talking about the same subject. So stay tuned. And Dr. Jamal, thank you so very much for being a part of our show. We gladly appreciate you for being an in-house resident, and thank you sincerely for all of your input. Ladies and gentlemen, we will see you on the way out of here. We are so fit for time here. I wish that we had time on our side, but because we've got to get out of here, I am going to get on this bus. So if you don't mind, come on and go with me. I've got to get up out of here. Thank you so much, ladies and gentlemen. And I will see you tomorrow. Thank you so much.